Oceana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Booger, up and in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He tied, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Well, this is kind of a head-scratching day for me. I'll let Eric answer if it's been a head-scratching day for him. The NCAA has decided to turn down the appeal of Notre Dame, and the Irish have to vacate 21 football victories from 2012-2013, stemming from the moment in time that Eric labeled as the Frozen Five, five Notre Dame players involved in some academic misconduct. They were suspended prior to the 2014 season, and it sure seems like, from my standpoint, Notre Dame did things the right way and got punished for it. We'll talk about it on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett. He is Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. Earlier today, the NCAA's decision, which was originally announced in November of 2016, this was all in response to the news of a former Notre Dame student athletic trainer who violated NCAA ethical conduct rules when she was a part of academic misconduct involving two football players and provided six other players impermissible academic extra benefits. And the five football players that, again, Eric kind of labeled as the Frozen Five because they were just kind of frozen in time for a long time, waiting to find out what was going to happen. Ishaq Williams, Kendall Moore, Eiler Hardy, Davaris Daniels, and Kavari Russell. They were all suspended prior to the 2014 season for academic misconduct. And Eric, this is a situation today where Notre Dame's losing 21 victories from 2012-2013. To me, that's the side story. The story is how the NCAA can look at this situation in which Notre Dame self-reported these violations. They took away the grades from these players and forced them to re-earn their grades. I mean, they disconnected themselves from the trainer. I guess it comes down to this. The NCAA believes that trainer was a university employee, and I think Notre Dame feels like she wasn't necessarily an employee of the university as a student trainer. To you, is that where the two sides start off in their disagreement, which leads to the punishment standing by the NCAA? They believe that trainer was an employee or a member of the university.
Yeah, an agent of the university, okay, is the best way to put it. I think that's one of the points where there is some separation, where this is how the NCAA is justifying sticking with the vacating of victories. And I believe what's interesting in this is that under the current NCAA rules, that particular assistant trainer wouldn't be considered an agent of the university. But at the time, the rule was such.
Brief.
So you're right. See, let me give you a big picture view of what I think, and then we can go point by point. But I think Father Jenkins hit it out of the park. I think he absolutely made some tremendous points in his letter.
And we're going to read some of those comments coming up.
I also have, you know, we can get into this too, in why Notre Dame decided to not expel the students, which would have been the easy way to flush this,
yeah,
and why they decided that they wanted to give them due process. But here, the bottom line for me is that today I believe the NCAA is the one that looks silly. you, especially when you just have, it was a strange coincidence that Notre Dame's basketball team, men's basketball team, played North Carolina last night, because it makes justice look very random, very capricious, and I think Notre Dame did the right thing in the way that they handled this, and it's just, it's another reason why I think the NCAA at some point, there's either going to be
goodbye,
a break from the Power Five, from the NCAA, and they'll have a different governing body, or there has to be some tremendous reform with the NCAA, because there's too many head scratchers like this. I think you've said it right opening the show, head scratcher. The 21 victories go away, but the five losses in those 2 years stay.
Eric, the NCAA's basic purpose, and Father Jenkins mentioned it in his statement released earlier today, to maintain intercollegiate athletics as an integral part of the educational program and the athlete as an integral part of the student body. So if you look at the facts in this situation, the University of Notre Dame, had they expelled those student athletes and given up on them, they wouldn't have been put in this particular situation by the NCAA, and they would still have those 21 victories. But instead, Notre Dame did the right thing by taking these young men, punishing them, but giving them an opportunity to redeem themselves in a second chance society,
right,
to re-earn those grades. And basically, they are being punished for giving those young men a second chance. If you just wipe your hands clean, expel them, see you later, we're not having this conversation. So if there,
and isn't that, if this student trainer had helped one regular student in addition to these football players, because that was the whole premise with the North Carolina fake classes, that regular students could take the fake classes too.
Fake classes.
Right.
Fake
classes where they didn't go back and recalculate the grade point averages, which would have made those students ineligible. They got degrees based on fake classes. And I'm not trying to take North Carolina down with Notre Dame. I'm saying you can't be the NCAA and say, this is our verdict here, and this is our verdict here, because there's some apples to apples things here. Darren, here.
Fake classes.
Okay, here's the thing that I want to bring this up, because I talked to a source at the time in late November of 2016 when the vacating of victories ruling first came down, before it was appealed. And I wanted to find out why the university went down the road that they did. And I think Father Jenkins mentioned it, but I wanted to bring up this point. It wanted to give, Notre Dame wanted to give the student athletes an opportunity to exonerate themselves, give them due process. And
as any university should.
And you could infer, Darren, by Eiler Hardy's reinstatement late in 2014, that he was at least successful in doing so.
Yes.
He came back, played on the team, got his degree. So if you expel Eiler Hardy, you
it's not a happy ending.
You cut him off from being able to get a Notre Dame degree when he didn't deserve that punishment. So Notre Dame wanted to get to the bottom of it. And they also, here's a couple other things. One other thing, basically. They wanted to find out just exactly what occurred. And by finding out, grades and GPAs had to be lowered and class credits removed, thus resulting in the ineligible players. Notre Dame also wanted to make sure there was no North Carolina parallel, that cheating was not systemic, but rather independent and isolated. So all those were their motivation for saying, you know what, this is who we are. We have due process at our university. We have this honor code, and we believe our students should have their day in court, you know. And it's insane, because if they were unfair and just said, you know what, we're going to do the wrong thing, we're going to wash our hands of these students, and they may be innocent, but we don't care, because this is going to get us out of vacating 21 victories. And I think it's ridiculous. I think the NCAA, in terms of its image, just put another nail in its coffin in terms of how long that this version of the NCAA is going to keep going. How many of these things do, I mean, when we look at the NCAA in totality, how, you know, we have roots from the Michigan State investigation going back to Mark Emmert, who supposedly knew about these things and did nothing about this. It just doesn't make any sense, Darren.
Eric, this is the same organization that the FBI did not tell that they were investigating the basketball shoe company scandal. They did not tell the NCAA because you know why? They know they are a bunch of airheads that are only going to screw things up because they've screwed up everything they've touched lately. So the FBI didn't even tell them what they were doing, exposed the little dirty secret that everybody has known in college basketball, what's going on with the shoe companies, and the NCAA is like, oh my goodness, we got to form committees to figure out what's going on. Give me a break. This organization is so over. It's time for the Power 65 to say see you later. And this is a football move because football moves the needle. Football makes the money. The Power 5 conferences need to say see you later to the NCAA, Eric. It is time for them to control their environment. They control the money. They control everything. And it's time to move away from the NCAA because they continue to be an absolute disgrace. And it's shameful that this horrible organization resides in our state. It's time for this to happen. And you know what? It's going to ruin an unbelievable NCAA basketball tournament. It's going to ruin it. Now, maybe there's a way to bring some of the other schools along in some capacity. But for football, it's time to go with the Power 65 or add a team like Connecticut for 66. You only play each other. We're done with the SEC playing all these state A&M universities in the middle of November. It's time for this to go away. And Eric, we're going to have 10 Division I hockey teams. I'm okay with that. This is going to change everything, but we cannot continue to deal with this garbage each and every year. The Carolina and the Notre Dame cases are shameful with the way they handle them both.
I agree with you, and I think two things kind of pop up here, Darren, as we kind of try to move beyond today's ruling. One is, how does this look on Brian Kelly, fairly, unfairly? How are people going to process this? How are fans going to process
it? I don't care how people process it. To blame him is ridiculous.
I would agree with you. And also, if you're a parent of a recruit or a recruit, does this affect the way you look at Notre Dame? I would think you'd look at them more favorably, that if your son was accused of something, that he's going to get due process. And the university is going to may have some silly consequences that they're going to get from the NCAA, but they're going to ensure that your son gets his day in their court, in their disciplinary arm. And again, the amazing part of this is you could make a case that had Notre Dame done this, they would have really messed with Iler Hardy, that this would have been a kid that didn't deserve to be expelled. And I still think the other kids deserve the second chances. If this was indeed their first offense, we're in a redemptive society. This is you could argue that Notre Dame is about second chances and giving people not third, fourth, fifth, and sixth chances, but second chances, yes.
So according to the NCAA, Notre Dame vacates 21 victories from 2012 and 2013, 12 being that road to the national championship game.
Right.
Notre Dame is put on one-year probation.
Which they've already served. This, okay. So they're done.
A two-year show cause order and disassociation for the former trainer.
Okay.
Done. And a $5,000 fine. Who comes up with $5,000? I mean,
maybe that was the budget for the NCAA's
the donuts.
Self-appreciation banquet. Yeah, I like the donuts better, the morning donuts.
So,
but I'll tell you, I think the NCAA is an easy target, Darren, and a lot of people take shots at them, and they don't take shots back. But in this case, they're begging for it. You know, and when you start to stack these on top of each other, you there has to be reform with the NCAA. The NCAA is the member institutions, and it seems to be getting away from that concept, and it's become a bureaucracy instead of a representation of the schools.
So, Father John Jenkins, president of the University of Notre Dame, released a statement today. Let me just read a couple of paragraphs. And, Eric, if you want to stop and jump in and
sure.
and analyze, feel free. And this is how the statement began. We are deeply disappointed by and strongly disagree with the denial of the university's appeal announced today by the NCAA of an earlier decision by the NCAA's Committee on Infractions to vacate Notre Dame's 2012 and 2013 football victories due to academic misconduct by several student athletes. Our concerns go beyond the particulars of our case and the record of two football seasons to the academic autonomy of our institutions, the integrity of college athletics, and the ability of the NCAA to achieve its fundamental purpose. Further on in the statement, in Notre Dame's case, two of the students had received assistance from a full-time undergraduate student who had part-time employment as an assistant to our athletic trainers. Student-to-student cheating is not normally within the NCAA's jurisdiction, but the NCAA concluded that the student's role as a part-time assistant trainer made her a, quote, representative of the institution, end quote, and justified a vacation of team records penalty in this case. There is no precedent in previous NCAA cases for the decision to add a discretionary penalty of vacation of team records in a case of student-to-student cheating involving a part-time student worker who had no role in academic advising. Another paragraph later on in this statement from Father Jenkins, Notre Dame's case stands in striking contrast with another recent high-profile academic misconduct case in which the NCAA Committee on Infractions chair explained that even though certain classes, quote, more likely than not, end quote, were used to keep athletes eligible with fraudulent credits, the legitimacy of those classes was beyond the jurisdiction of the NCAA's enforcement process, precisely because the question must be left to the determination of the university and the exercise of its academic autonomy. The notion that a university's exercise of academic autonomy can, under NCAA rules, lead to exoneration or to a severe penalty without regard to the way in which it is used defies logic and any notion of fundamental fairness. Just some of the statements from Notre Dame President Father John Jenkins today. And that last paragraph was fantastic. The school being mentioned, of course, is North Carolina. And he absolutely dropped the mic when he finished that paragraph.
I think he dropped the mic a few times. I thought this was outstanding. And again, it wasn't just an emotional response and a bunch of excuses. It was a very well put together, point by point, counterpoint argument, which, again, you know, I was listening to some of the national serious shows today, and people just are looking at the NCAA going, my goodness, they've reached a new low. But, you know, I think where it hurts Notre Dame fans, Darren, is that history is so much a part of being a Notre Dame fan. And so by taking away those victories, you're pulling a little piece of history away. Had these victories stayed, Notre Dame on September 1st would have had a chance to beat Michigan and retake the lead in all-time win percentage in college football.
I asked this on...
And now they have a chance to spoil Jim Harbaugh's day.
That's right. I asked this question on Twitter today to my followers. My Twitter account is at 961SportsBeat. The question of the day was this. Does it matter to you Notre Dame has to vacate 21 wins from 2012 and 2013? And there's about an hour left in the voting. 53% doesn't matter to them. 47% it matters to them. I can see both sides. I'm voting on the no side. It doesn't change anything from a great season. And again, I stand by the process that Notre Dame put forth in handling this particular situation. Self-reported, They gave the young men a second opportunity. They wiped out the grades. They started over, and they re-earned those grades by doing their work without the benefit of someone else being involved in the process. To be punished for that is ridiculous. Utterly ridiculous. So take the victories. Care less. The fact that Notre Dame gave those young men an opportunity and a guy like Eiler Hardy took advantage and he graduated, I think that goes in the win column for Notre Dame, even though it's not going to be recognized by the NCAA. That is the most important win of this whole situation.
Amen.
Time to go. Time to leave. Get the U-Haul. It's time to leave the NCAA. It's been overtime, and now today was kind of the final piece of the puzzle for me. I've been done with the NCAA for a while. The North Carolina thing's an absolute embarrassment, and this today was just the icing on the cake. And I hate to kill the greatest basketball tournament there is, but it's time to get it's time to be done with these clowns. I mean, it can very easily be done, Eric. I mean, the Power Five can break away and start their own organization. I mean, there's been some movement behind the scenes and looking over that particular situation, so hopefully it'll come very soon. It'll change a lot of sports, unfortunately, but for me, the time has come. Do you agree?
I agree. I very much agree.
It is 27 minutes after the top of the hour. When we come back, we'll shift gears to Notre Dame basketball, who had a chance to win at Carolina last night. Carolina played better down the stretch, picked up the victory. We'll talk about that coming up. More on this whole NCAA storyline in just a little bit as SportsBeat continues on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports Beat presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm Darren Pritchett. Thanks for joining us. Notre Dame loses its appeal at the NCAA. They are forced to vacate 21 victories from the 12-13 campaign. We just had a conversation on that storyline. We'll get to more in just a little bit. Someone made a point on Twitter that was actually an interesting point, caught our attention, and Eric went to research what was posted during the break. So let me set it up and you've got the answer. I'm just going to read from someone's Twitter feed. They point out that Penn State is involved in one of the worst scandals in sports history, and the NCAA grants back their previously vacated wins. Notre Dame finds cheaters, punishes them, self-reports them, and the NCAA vacates their win. Stay classy, NCAA. So is that person correct that after the horrific situation at Penn State, they actually got their victories back?
In January of 2015, Penn State was awarded 112 wins back. They announced a settlement with the school weeks before a scheduled trial began with involving this kind of stuff. So this was some kind of settlement that they got their victories back. I don't think that Notre Dame is going to go down that road. I think they're just going to push forward at this point.
Okay, very good. Eric and Darren with you. Let's move on to basketball. We'll get back to this story coming up in just a couple of moments. Notre Dame last night down in Chapel Hill to take on the North Carolina Tar Heels, the defending national champions. Carolina pulls out an 83-66 victory. The final score deceiving as Notre Dame was in position with 6-7 minutes to go in the game to pull out a victory against an ACC team on the road and a ranked basketball team. But the Irish faded down the stretch. Carolina made the plays and won by 17. Notre Dame hit just one field goal over their final 5-plus minutes of the game. And that was right after Notre Dame went on an 11-2 run, and they got to within 58-57. But Carolina executed. Their transition offense was truly a difference maker last night. And Notre Dame's offense, unfortunately, stalled down the stretch. You look back at the first half, it was a win for Notre Dame at halftime being down 38-34. I don't believe they were playing great basketball at that time. Carolina was hitting 50% of their shots. Notre Dame was hitting 36%. And three key starters, Matt Farrell, Rex Pfluger, TJ Gibbs, they went a combined 1-for-18 from the field in the first half. With all those storylines, you're only down four. You felt kind of good that they might be able to steal this because it felt like they should have been down 12 or 13 points at some times. But the Irish hung tough. They were there 58-57, and there was a sequence where there was a pick and roll, and they throw it to Torres on the roll. The ball goes through his hands. They turn it over. Mooney misses three consecutive free throws after being fouled on a three-point shot. And those two moments just kind of zapped the Irish of some momentum as they had a chance to possibly take the lead. And then Carolina got going, and the rest is history. And, Eric, it's just going to be tough. This is not rocket science. But when Farrell, Pfluger, and Gibbs go 5-for-34 from the field and score 22 points, it's going to be difficult to beat anybody in the ACC, let alone a top 20 Carolina team at the Dean Dome. Now, they got some great performances to help offset those slow nights, but those are the guys that stir the drink. And 5-for-34, that's just going to be awfully difficult to overcome.
I don't think you can win an inter-squad game going 5-for-34. It's tough.
But those three.
I did like Farrell's 9 assists and 0 turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, 5-for-34, my goodness. That's rough. I think I would have passed to John Mooney a lot.
You know what's interesting? He went 5-for-5 in the first half. He ended up 6-for-6.
Yeah.
It feels like there's an opportunity to get a guy that's in a rhythm. More touches of the basketball. Now, he had a three that he was fouled on, so that doesn't count as an attempt. And he missed all three free throws. But as I was watching the game, I guess I didn't realize that Mooney did not have many chances to shoot in the second half. But then looking at the box score, when a guy goes 5-for-5 of the first half, he's got to get touches. And he was hitting shots with guys in his face, so he was not afraid to fire in the first half with a hand in his grill. So I think that's probably a little disappointing. He walks away with only 6 3-point attempts and made all six. At that point, if you're 5-for-5, I want him to go 6-for-13. Keep firing. Yeah. He was your guy, especially with three other guys struggling from the field. But it was great to see Mooney get going. And his 15 points really kept them close in the first half. He was the big reason why it was only 38-34. But it's just kind of back to that storyline during the 7-game losing streak, in position late in the ball game, unable to make what Mike Bray calls those dagger plays that they did against Florida State and that they did against Boston College. And this program has not won away from Purcell Pavilion since January the 6th. And that was that late come-from-behind 51-49 victory over Syracuse. And to make the NCAA tournament, they're going to have to win a couple of road games at least to have a chance to be on the bubble for the NCAA tournament. But I think the most disappointing part of that game last night, to go along with the way the game finished, and I was listening to the pregame, or it was early on in the first half, I can't remember which, but I was listening to Jack and Zach call the game here on WSBT radio in my car, and I believe it was Jack that mentioned that the one thing or something that was really emphasized on the dry erase board before the game was transition defense. And that was not a strength of the Irish last night. And there was one play that I felt like symbolized the lack of proper transition defense. Eric, there was a sequence in which Austin Torres got a bounce pass and a slam dunk at the rim. Carolina got the ball down the floor. And you know the first person back in the paint defending and getting a foul was? It was Austin Torres. How could Austin Torres, the guy who dunked the basketball, be the first guy back defensively? That's extremely disappointing. We hear about emptying the tank. That was not emptying the tank. And he got a foul because nobody else got their tails back to play defense. So that was disappointing last night. Transition defense, you know Carolina, what they're going to do, and I don't understand how that was not executed better by this team, especially on a night in which, you know, you're not hitting shots from the field. That transition defense could have been the difference in that game last night. So knowing that was going to be a strength of Carolina, that to me was the most disappointing part of the night. You knew it was coming, and they are great at zipping the ball down the floor. You just got to be a little quicker than them. It wasn't a secret. You knew they were going to do it. It's just like, you know, Nolan Ryan's going to throw a bunch of fastballs when you come to the ballpark and Nolan Ryan's the starting pitcher against you. You know, Carolina's going to bring it down the floor in a hurry. So transition defense, that was disappointing for me last night. Well, Mike Bray had plenty to say after the game. He spoke with Zach Hillsland, the analyst on the Notre Dame Basketball Radio Network last night. And here was their brief conversation after Carolina beat Notre Dame 83-66.
Played great, you know, love our group, man. We fought. They had an unbelievable offensive explosion there for about 2 minutes, and that put us away. But, you know, our group continues to fight. You know, I thought Johnny Mooney was fabulous. He continues to get confident. Our guards didn't shoot it as well, but they'll bounce back and shoot it better on Saturday.
Certainly had a little bit of adversity there in the first half with fouls for Marty Gebben, but he bounced back in the second half. Talk a little bit about his maturity and being able to stay focused for this one.
Yeah, you know, wish we could have had him a little longer in the first half, but, you know, Marty's a senior and a veteran. I thought he was fabulous in the second half and just didn't want to use him in the first half. We were keeping it close and down four right where we want to be, but Marty continues to empty the tank every night.
All right, now you got a couple of days before you head out to Boston College for a rematch with a very tough Eagles team. What are you looking forward to for that game?
We need some rest first, Zach. You know, when we play these quick turnarounds and our guys are logging some heavy minutes, we need 2 days to get our energy back and recover, and we'll go on the road and see if we can get a road win. Haven't had a road win in a while. That would be a goal for us on Saturday.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Coach.
Those were Mike Bray's comments on the Notre Dame Radio Network last night on 96.1 FM WSBT. And he's right, Mooney played a heck of a ball game, shooting that ball well from the field and helping to keep the Irish close throughout that game. Martinus Gebben had a really, really good solid night, too, for the Fighting Irish, but just not enough offense last night as they fall to Carolina, 83-66. So the state of the state, where are we? The Irish are 5-8, the ACC, and the next four games are winnable. I don't know if they're the favorite in all four, but they're winnable. Now, the BC game, which is Saturday, and that'll be, I think it's a 4 p.m. tip here on WSBT Radio. Let me check. Yeah, 4 o'clock on Saturday. Irish just beat them February 6th at home, 96-85. But Boston College in Chestnut Hill has beaten Duke, Georgia Tech, Florida State, and in their last game, a ranked Miami basketball team. So I call it a winnable game, but Boston College has played excellent basketball at home. They're not the same team on the road recently. Their road games, they've lost to Notre Dame. They've lost to Syracuse by 18. They lost to Louisville. They lost to North Carolina by 30 points. They lost to Virginia by one on the road. So they're not the same team on the road. They're really, really good at home, so this is going to be a test. It is a winnable game. Last road win for the Irish at Syracuse, January 6th. Miami would be next. That's a home game. Any home game is winnable for the Fighting Irish, but this is a ranked Miami team, again, that just lost to Boston College 72-70 on Saturday. Then you've got Wake Forest. They're bad. Now, they beat Florida State at home, but that's not a very good Wake Forest team. Very, very winnable game. You come home senior day against an awful Pittsburgh team. That's going to be a victory. Those two are going to be victories. And the final game, that's going to be tough. They have their issues, even when Notre Dame is really, really good against Virginia. And number one, Virginia will wrap up the regular season in Charlottesville. So you're 5-8. If you win the next four, you get to 9-8. You lose to Virginia, you're 9-9, and you reach Mike Bray's goal from way back when Bonzi Colson went down with an injury. And it gives you a shot at the tournament because I think the committee might give the Irish the benefit of the doubt getting that done without Bonzi Colson. And it would really help if Bonzi's going to be available for the postseason. Now, 8-10?
Yeah.
8-10 gets a little more interesting. Do they have enough quality victories within the ACC to solidify that 8-10 record?
I also think it's going to be interesting, Darren, to see what DJ Harvey can bring when he
Great
comes
point.
Back.
Yeah.
Because they have more options then. You know, they have more lineups they can go with. That's another body. And DJ was kind of a streaky player, but when he was streaky good, he was really difficult to deal with.
9-9 with all those injuries, I just have to feel like they're going to sneak in, and that's without comparing everybody else's resumes. Right. I'm being very generic with that comment. I understand that because you have to break down all the teams to really make that statement and make it ring true. But 8-10, that makes me very nervous. That would take maybe a heck of a run in the ACC tournament to get it done. Again, it's going to come down to those quality wins in the ACC. Do they have enough that could push them over the top? You don't want that Virginia game to be a game that decides whether you win 8 or possibly 9 games. You just can't count on that game as a victory. It's going to be very difficult. Virginia's rolling right now. That pack line defense even gave the Conantons and the Grants, you know, trouble back in the day. They just play tremendous defense. They're very efficient on offense despite not taking many shots or as many shots as other teams. So you just got to beat BC. You got to beat BC on the road. And I know they've beaten 4 really good teams at home. They just got to find a way to do it. And they're good enough to do it. Eric, even without Bonzi Colson last night, they were extremely competitive against North Carolina. Now, the last 6-7 minutes, they didn't hit shots. They did not execute at the level in order to pick up the victory. But watching them play with Farrell back, even on an off-shooting night, they are a team capable of beating anybody in the ACC. Now, Virginia on the road, that'd be extremely difficult. But they look like such a better basketball team. They're a different team with Farrell on the floor. And with Farrell on the floor, despite the bad shooting last night, that rare off night, it just makes me believe they're capable of winning the next 4 games. I know the final 6-7 minutes didn't turn out the way you wanted. They did not play to the level necessary to win. But for 33 minutes, I saw enough from that group, despite the poor transition defense. Fortunately, the next 4 teams don't have the transition offense Carolina has. I mean, they're a sports car. I feel good about their chances to be competitive and have a chance to win each of those 4 games. I'm not going to guarantee 4 wins because I respect BC at home, what they've accomplished, and I respect Miami being a very efficient team this year. They're going to beat Wake Forest. They're going to beat Pitt. So they're going to have 7 ACC wins. It's whether they can pick up a couple of more along the way. But I still feel good about this group, even without Colson, going at least 3-1 in the next 4 games. Am I being overly optimistic?
I think you're more optimistic than I am, but okay. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, especially with DJ Harvey coming back. I'm really curious to see what he is post-injury, because he's the guy that's going to be really good someday. I'm just not sure when the consistency and everything kicks in. Because he's fun. He's a good player.
And you just don't know how quickly he finds the rhythm after sitting several weeks.
Right, just like Matt Farrell the first couple games back. And then he had a really good game and then had a tough shooting game. But again, I give Farrell credit on a day where you can't, to have 9 assists and 0 turnovers. That's an excellent spot on your stat sheet.
Sign of a mentally tough veteran basketball player, a guy that's been around this program for a little while. He knows how to get it done. So Carolina wins 83-66. Some rest time for the Irish until they take on Boston College in Chestnut Hill Saturday at 4:00 here on 96.1 FM WSBT. And then home against Miami, at Wake Forest, home against Pittsburgh, and then the finale at Virginia. So the path to the bubble gets a little more difficult. But at the start of the year, you probably had Carolina penciled in as a loss in Chapel Hill.
Right.
They still need to steal one in BC on the road. That would be very helpful to getting them back on that train to get at least to the bubble. I'm not talking about tournament yet. You got to get to the bubble first. And they're going to have to, if they can beat BC and Miami, then you're getting back into the conversation. Because if you beat BC and Miami, you're going to beat Wake Forest and Pittsburgh, in my opinion. You're going to.
Okay. I would agree. I think Pittsburgh bad.
Oh, oof.
Yeah.
Kevin Stallings, oof.
What happened there? There was a point where he was a pretty good coach.
At Illinois State, at Vanderbilt?
Yeah, at Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. He had Vanderbilt going on for a while. And then at Pittsburgh, man.
Well, he took over a program that wasn't exactly looking Bo Derek.
Yeah, but Jamie Dixon was winning there, and then
but it was downhill for the last few years.
What was the guy's name before that? There was a guy there that
Ben Howland.
Ben Howland was.
He got it going.
Yeah, he did.
He really got it going, but they stalled, and they could not figure out the burn. Jamie Dixon left Pittsburgh, I truly believe, because of Mike Bray's burn offense. No matter what he tried, the burn offense was his kryptonite. He just couldn't figure it out. My five question of the day coming up, Eric's five biggest takeaways from this Notre Dame infractions case and the NCAA denying the Notre Dame appeal, leading to 21 vacated football victories. That's next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
What are Eric's five biggest takeaways from the Notre Dame infractions case? Or he can go down the road in talking about the NCAA's appeal decision denying Notre Dame's appeal, and the Irish have to vacate 21 victories from the 2012 and 13 campaigns. We begin with answer number five.
I think unlike the initial decision in November, I think Brian Kelly kind of comes out of this neutral. I think people that were supportive of him are going to continue to be supportive and optimistic about where he's taking the program, and the people that have been trying to throw daggers at him, this is going to add to their litany. They're going to add this to the list. They're going to dig in their heels and say this is another reason why they need a coaching change.
Number four.
Notre Dame didn't sit on its hands with this whole thing. When after the first investigation that Notre Dame did itself, they put a task force together to figure out why this happened and how they could keep it from happening in the future. They've done things like adding academic support staff for athletes. And I think that's a big positive for Notre Dame.
The five biggest takeaways from Notre Dame's infraction case and the NCAA appeal, number three.
Well, if I get in a situation where I'm in a legal tussle with somebody, I'm bringing Father Jenkins with me because I think he hit it out of the park in terms of presenting his arguments. I want him on my side on those kind of debates. And, you know, whoever helped him craft that, but Father Jenkins made the statement, and I thought it was very good.
Number two.
Notre Dame stayed true to who it is in this, and I think that was important, that they said, this is our academic code. I don't think Notre Dame is going to change the way it does business in the future from the standpoint of giving students due process, which I think is what you would want.
Five biggest takeaways from the Notre Dame infraction case and the NCAA's appeal ruling. Number five, BK comes out neutral in the world of perception. Number four, Notre Dame put together a task force looking for answers. Number three, Father Jenkins, great argument, hit a home run. Number two, Notre Dame stayed true to who they are. Number one,
the NCAA stayed true to who it is. And unfortunately, it needs reform, and it underscored that point very much today.
That is today's My Five Question of the Day from 96.1 FM WSBT.
Here's Eric Hansen with what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section.
Well, Mike Farrell had the story, and I'll have the analysis of today's NCAA appeal being turned down for Notre Dame and vacating victories. Jack Walkden, who is writing a little bit for us part-time, he'll have something on the Buchanan anniversary, whatever that means. And Mike Farrell also has a story on Tommy Reese's growth as a coach and much, much more.
All in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune sports section. I enjoyed it. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Sounds great.
Sean joins me in a couple of moments. It is the top of the hour at WSBT South Bend.
Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT presents Budweiser's weekday sports beat.
Booger, up right in! With 2 seconds left, Notre Dame leads!
Malpas again, backhands, he scores!
Down to the corner, Jablonski, three is good!
Andrew steps in, he's going to throw deep for T.Y., he's got it!
Flips to Jenkins, three for the win, it's good! Villanova wins it!
He dives, it is a touchdown! New England wins!
Adios! Cubs win their ninth in a row!
Miles Boykin is in the end zone!
The Irish have come back!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
It is 6 minutes after the top of the hour. Sports Beat on 96.1 FM WSBT, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. We'll talk more about the NCAA denying Notre Dame's appeal and the Irish have to vacate 21 victories in a couple of moments. We'll talk some Irish basketball. I'm sure we can fit that in. Rapid fire. Frank Reich held his press conference today. The new head coach of the Colts will play some of that audio back. But we have some breaking news as Warsaw's Community School District, their school board has approved their new head football coach, and he comes from the NIC and someone that Sean Steyer's worked with this year. Mishawaka has lost Bart Curtis to Warsaw, so there is a head coaching vacancy in the NIC at Mishawaka High School as Bart Curtis leaves to go to the Warsaw Tigers. Did not see that one coming.
No, I think everyone, when they initially heard this news, was pretty shocked. You and I both included, and just never would have. Bart Curtis just kind of seemed like one of those guys who was going to be at Mishawaka forever. He had been there for 10 years and won almost 10 games a year was the average. Amazing when you think about it that way. But he won 95 games in 10 years there and really did enjoy it. I know this was a challenging season for him. They were really competitive even in some of the games that they lost, but still had a winning record this year. Played a really tough early season schedule against Portage Valparaiso and Chicago Marist, but just shocking. His son, apparently he met with the football team yesterday. His son is an assistant at Warsaw, and that was one of the reasons that he gave his team for going down there. They are Warsaw, obviously. They're a 6A school, so there's a much bigger enrollment down there. You've got different challenges with that. But
the four-letter word is still...
Well, that's right. <10. laughs> But unlike Warsaw, Bart Curtis showed at Mishawaka that he could beat Penn. Now, he hadn't done it for the last couple of years, but they beat Penn pretty soundly a few years back, two or three times.
Three in a row, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, he showed that at Mishawaka he could get it done and really brought, I think, a lot of pride to that program at Mishawaka in doing so. So we obviously wish him well, but now for Dean Huppert, and we'll be talking to him sooner than later as well, the challenge is going to be who you find to replace him. And you kind of would think that, sort of similar to some of the things that we talked about when Mike Elko went to Texas A&M, the biggest thing about keeping Clark Lee is you keep the defensive scheme in place that did so well. And Mishawaka's signature is that triple option offense. So you would think that that would be something that they will want to keep there at Mishawaka because it's been a big part of the success that Bart Curtis had there and before he came here when he was at New Prairie as well. And he's got a couple of pretty good assistants, co-offensive coordinators, Kyle Shaw, Keith Kinder, and that they both know that system really well. Hopefully one of those guys gets a look or both of them. But I mean, they're both fairly young guys and bring a lot of energy, and they've been around Bart Curtis for a long time as well.
Defensive coordinator would be a good candidate too.
Well, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying from an offensive standpoint, that's the big thing. So
10 years at Mishawaka, Curtis goes 90-35, and in 27 years as a high school football coach, he has 201 victories. And now a new challenge for Coach Curtis as he goes to Warsaw. So that's the breaking news this afternoon. We kind of heard all this the last couple of days, but really couldn't report much because Warsaw had to approve the hire, and now they have approved the hire.
Right.
And now the ball is rolling, and Mishawaka will look for a new head football coach. And game one is August 17th at Portage.
Warsaw, by the way, 0-19 all-time against Penn.
So he gets to try to wreck another Penn streak.
That's right.
All right, so good luck to Coach Curtis, one of the fun guys to be around. It was a pleasure to get to know him on the high school football scene, and we wish him good luck in Warsaw, taking over that Tigers program.
Absolutely.
Okay, now to the story of the day in terms of Notre Dame football. Notre Dame's appeal of an NCAA decision to vacate all 21 victories from 12-13 has been denied by the NCAA Division I Infractions Appeals Committee. The NCAA made the announcement on Tuesday. This goes back to the Frozen Five. and you had a student athletic trainer violate NCAA rules when they committed academic misconduct for two football players and provided six other players with impermissible academic extra benefits. And the Frozen Five, as Eric labeled them back in the day, Ishaq Williams, Kendall Moore, Eiler Hardy, Tavares Daniels, and Kavari Russell were suspended prior to the 14 season for academic misconduct. One example, Eiler Hardy was reinstated, had to retake classes, and played football and got his degree. So Notre Dame gave him that second chance, and he is one of the individuals that took advantage of that opportunity. But basically, the NCAA is saying that that trainer, that student trainer, was a representative of the university. Notre Dame does not define her in that same fashion. And I think that's where at least the disagreement starts. So they lose the 21 victories, 1 year probation that's already been served, a 2 year show cause order and disassociation from the first former trainer, and a $5,000 fine. So this basically comes down to, had Notre Dame just expelled those players, the 21 victories are still in their back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
But because they are a university that wanted to give these individuals a second chance, they are being punished for doing so. So we're now in a world where you're supposed to expel a kid and not give them another opportunity to preserve victories at the collegiate football level. And that's where you put on the clown suit if you're the NCAA.
And that's exactly right. There are just so many hypocrisies when you start talking about the NCAA. And obviously this case specifically, because you said it, the NCAA is saying that a part-time student trainer has the same level of institutional connection as any coach, professor, any other employee of the school, essentially, even though they were themselves just a student who was making a little extra money in the training department. So by this rationale, if Charles Dutton's character in Rudy had helped Rudy with some classes, then Ara Parseghian would have lost a few wins back in the day, I guess. So, but per Father Jenkins, quote, the committee simply failed to provide any rationale why it viewed the student worker as an institutional representative in our case, end quote. And I mean, it pretty much says it right there. They did not do that. And when you just, again, look at the inconsistencies and hypocrisy in the whole thing, the NCAA always likes to use this word student athlete. And you go to any NCAA tournament event, if you sit in those press conferences, they want to introduce them as the student athletes. And they always flaunt that student is supposed to come first, that is the priority, because 400,000 NCAA athletes are going to go pro in something other than sports. Well, Eiler Hardy got a second chance, which is what you would want. He came back, he got his degree so that he could go pro in something other than sports. Notre Dame fulfilled its academic mission in letting him do so. They made him earn what he got. And these other guys, some of them stayed in school and continued to work as well, and they all had their GPAs adjusted and their grades adjusted and everything else, which is what you're supposed to want from these academic institutions. But the NCAA, for whatever reason, doesn't see it that way. And I know that you guys have talked about North Carolina, and Father Jenkins essentially referenced them in this as well, but you're talking about a department at North Carolina that essentially created classes and created degree programs for athletes at North Carolina, essentially for nothing other for them than them to be able to stay eligible. So they end up with these worthless degrees, and now most of them can't get a job because they have worthless degrees, but they were eligible, and by the letter of the law, they supposedly did what they were supposed to be doing at North Carolina. And it's just a complete joke is what it is.
Notre Dame's president, Father John Jenkins, in a statement today addressed the North Carolina situation without addressing the North Carolina situation. He wrote, Notre Dame's case stands in striking contrast with another recent high-profile academic misconduct case in which the NCAA Committee on Infractions chair explained that even though certain classes, quote, more likely than not, end quote, were used to keep athletes eligible with fraudulent credits, the legitimacy of those classes was beyond the jurisdiction of the NCAA's enforcement process, precisely because that question must be left to the determination of the university in the exercise of its academic autonomy. The notion that a university's exercise of academic autonomy can under NCAA rules lead to exoneration or to a severe penalty without regard to the way in which it is used defies logic and any notion of fundamental fairness. So they left it up to Carolina to decide whether it was right or wrong. That just makes total sense.
Right.
Let's see. The IRS is going to let me decide this year whether I'm going to pay taxes or not. Let me see. What am I going to decide?
Perfect situation.
You know, I think I'll just pass this year. I'm going to tell them, no, I'm not going to do it this year.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, but North Carolina sure is in a lot of NCAA tournament basketball games every year, aren't they? They're on TV quite a bit. There's quite a bit of value in making sure North Carolina basketball wasn't slapped with any big infractions or sanctions for the NCAA, which makes $1 billion a year off the backs of the schools. Yeah. Without doing much for him in return.
So are you ready to jump on the bandwagon and say it's time for the Power Five conferences to leave the NCAA and start their own organization? Are you okay with that?
The more you look at it, kind of what I was just referencing there, I think you can definitely argue that the NCAA needs the Power Five schools a heck of a lot more than vice versa. I mean, what does the NCAA do other than create a bunch of rules that the schools have to follow? We've seen all these different inconsistencies with the way things are doled out. Just look at Penn State, for example. But the whole thing with Joe Paterno and Sandusky, we know what went on there. I mean, there is a heck of a lot stronger direct line to Joe Paterno and what he knew compared to Brian Kelly here at Notre Dame. But Joe Paterno got all his 100-plus wins back out of the whole deal. And the things that happened there are a heck of a lot more egregious than what happened here. But so that kind of a little tangent there a little bit, but the short answer is yes. I would not be disappointed. And I think it's in around 5 years or so, some of these TV contracts are going to start coming up. And I'd be surprised if you didn't hear maybe a little bit of uprising from the Power Five schools.
65 teams in the Power Five, find a 66th team, and off you go.
Well, and I mean, when you think about it, we all know football drives the bus,
sure,
right? And the NCAA puts on championships in all these other schools, and that's great, but they don't for football. Football does its own thing. They don't need the NCAA. And if you pared it down, I think the Power Five conferences could get things figured out just fine.
I think it's going to happen at some point, and it may happen sooner rather than later. And it's going to ruin the basketball tournament, but maybe there's a way around that, sort of like Notre Dame has a membership to Big Ten hockey. Maybe you can amend something where you add some teams for basketball.
Yeah,
I don't have that part figured out, but all I know is we'd be down to probably 10 Division I hockey teams. And schools like BU and North Dakota, who have been powerhouses, do they just become Division II schools? And as a Division II school, do they get the best players anymore? I mean, I think I know the answer to that, but that causes a very interesting dilemma in college hockey.
It would definitely affect the non-revenue schools, especially if you're outside the Power Five, that's for sure. Now, or not? I said non-revenue schools, non-revenue sports is what I meant. Yeah, but yeah, I think that it could strengthen, potentially, if you're in a Power Five conference, it could also strengthen the non-revenue sports, because when you're talking about Power Five conferences make over $6 billion a year annually. And again, the NCAA makes $1 billion. So when you're talking about funneling that money and keeping it within the conference, I think it would do a lot for those 60-plus schools.
Can you imagine the college hockey having just 10 teams?
That would be tough. That's right.
Every team would be loaded. It would probably send a lot of kids, unfortunately, to Canada for junior hockey. That might be the one drawback, but that's down the line. We'll worry about that when we get to that point. 21 minutes after the top of the hour, you want to talk a little Irish basketball for a second?
If you want to.
Yeah, let's do it before we get to rapid fire here in just a couple of moments. As the Irish had a chance to win at North Carolina last night, 83-66. Boy, they're in a great spot. They're right there.
I know.
To steal this victory, even with some of their main guys having an off offensive night.
They're right down to the wire, but well, not down to the wire, but it came down toward the end and just couldn't quite finish it off once again. Great night by John Mooney. I didn't think he was ever going to miss out there.
Wish he would have had a few more shots.
Yeah, I know. Maybe that's the problem.
Well, they're 5-8, and we have been trying to figure out a way to get to 9-9, and we had Carolina as a loss. So they're still one behind our pace that we set a few weeks ago. So it comes down to we both had a loss at Boston College.
Right.
So they're going to have to flip that into a W to kind of get them back on track.
Right.
To have a chance to go 9-9. And again, BC at home has beaten Duke, Florida State, Georgia Tech, and Miami. So they play well at home, the same team that lost by 30 at North Carolina and got beat by the Irish just a few days ago, 96-85. It's a winnable game. Their guards obviously are a problem. Robinson had the monumental game at Purcell Pavilion.
Yeah.
But now it's down to the opportunities to get back on the bubble are it's slim. You have no opportunities for slip-ups now. As you got to win at BC, you got to beat Miami at home, you're going to beat Wake Forest on the road, you're going to beat Pittsburgh at home. There's four opportunities to win. That could get you to 9-8. And then all of a sudden you can lose to Virginia, be at 9-9.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here looking at the schedule, and you're talking about a Notre Dame team that hasn't won more than two games in a row since back mid to late December when they beat Dartmouth, Southeastern Louisiana, then Georgia Tech, NC State, and Syracuse, and things got going well in the ACC. But so that's the last time they won more than two games in a row. So now you're coming down to your last five games, and you've got to win four out of those five. So the odds are definitely against them. But, again, the opportunities are still there. They still have a really good chance in front of them, but it's a matter of finishing some of these games off.
So the Irish will go to Boston College Saturday at 4 o'clock on 96.1 FM WSBT. So some downtime, some rest time, and a chance to find those shooting strokes for Farrell, Pfluger, and Gibbs after just one of those nights. But Gebben was good. Mooney was good. But they come up short at North Carolina. 5-8 the ACC with four games that they could win coming up before they play Virginia on the road. One final thing, just to take a step back in our NCAA conversation, the Twitter question of the day: does it matter to you that Notre Dame has to vacate 21 victories from 2012 and 2013? I asked that question on my Twitter account at 961 SportsBeat, and the results as of right now: 47% say yes, it does matter to them; 53% say no. I go in the no category.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm surprised that it's that close.
I am too.
I thought there'd be a lot more. 60-70% who'd say no.
I think
no,
there's just a lot of pride of the history
of the football program,
and it takes them out of that number one, number two spot in the wins and win percentage.
That's very true.
So I think that's probably what it stems from, but be proud of your university for the route they took in handling this situation.
Completely agree.
Okay, let's step aside. We'll do a little rapid fire coming up. You'll hear from new Colts head coach Frank Reich a little later on. Colts football is coming up this fall on 96.1 FM WSBT. More to come on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, brought to you by Budweiser on 96.1 FM WSBT. 40 degree temperatures, sign me up. That sounds like 70 degrees to me.
Go figure.
Beautiful. I don't mind a little melting.
8 degrees this morning when I peaked my... Yeah, I know there's going to be a ton of melting.
We will not complain.
No.
Not one peep.
Not at all.
Sean and Darren with you, 28 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. NCAA denies Notre Dame's appeal of vacating 21 victories. Bart Curtis, former Mishawaka head football coach, now the head coach at Warsaw. Those are a couple of the top storylines of the day. What else is happening? Rapid fire will take us down that road.
All right, we're going to start with some Notre Dame basketball. We'll go back to that a little bit. Easy one for you here.
Uh-oh.
Fill in the blank. We'll call this one a slam dunk. Fill in the blank. Notre Dame lost to North Carolina last night because of blank.
Not enough shots by
River.
John Mooney.
All right, Fletch.
Give him the ball. No, I would say, seriously, I mean, I would like to see Mooney take more shots because he was 6 for 6. I just really felt like for 40 minutes, even though it was stressed by the coaches listening to the Notre Dame broadcast on WSBT last night, I was just really disappointed in transition defense. Carolina scores a lot of points in transition, and even though the Irish didn't finish strong over the final 5 to 7 minutes, I just thought throughout key portions of the game, Carolina got a little separation because they got two easy baskets in transition.
Yeah, I would agree with that in part. The bottom line, though, is they just didn't shoot well. They were just under 38% as a team, which is back to where they were during the 7-game losing streak when they were under 40% in each of those games. And I mean, there are things like what you just said, the transition defense, okay, and Carolina shot 53% themselves. You could say, well, Gebbin got into some early foul trouble, and I know a lot of fans were obviously upset about the way the game was being called. Mike Bray at times was upset about it. But to me, they just didn't shoot well. But it is amazing that Gebbin ended up with 18 points in 17 minutes. I was shocked by that when I looked at the stat sheet today. And yeah, if Mooney hits the three free throws, if Mooney hits the three free throws, it's a one-point game with a little under 7 minutes left. But without Mooney, they're not even in the game. You know, because he...
Agreed.
I mean, he killed those three-pointers.
With hands in his face.
Yeah. Just a great night by him. But Jay Billis said early in the broadcast that Matt Farrell and TJ Kibbs had to combine for somewhere around 40 points if Notre Dame was going to have a chance. And when you look at the way things worked out, now maybe that was an overstatement early on, but they totaled 19 points, and obviously they combined to shoot 4 of 27. That's just 14%. Those two guys can't combine to shoot 14% if they're going to have a chance to win.
On another subject, I'm a big Bill Raftery fan analyzing a game.
Okay.
Very smart guy.
Now, I've got a Billis question coming up here in just a second if you want to hold off on that.
Okay.
I don't know where you were going to go with that, no, but I had an idea.
I'll wait.
Okay.
I'll wait.
All right. We're probably thinking along the same lines, so you'll have your chance after that.
The question is, can you keep winning?
That's right.
I don't know.
And it wasn't just those two. I mean, after Mooney missed the free throws, too, TJ Kibbs hits a couple. But then down the stretch, Notre Dame goes just 2 out of 10 from the field. And really, the way North Carolina finished was the way Notre Dame finished against Florida State. Carolina finished 20-7 to close the game over about the last 7 minutes. And that's really what Notre Dame did to the Seminoles Saturday when they won. They just didn't shoot well. You make half of those shots that they missed, and it's a completely different game at the end.
They did not help themselves at the free throw line either.
No. No. A lot of things did not go right.
In a place where you have to have a lot of things go right to get out of there with a win.
Yep. Okay, so back to Billis. And I don't know if this is exactly where you were going to go. He used the word terrible to refer to Farrell's game quite a bit last night. So do you buy or sell the assessment? One, is this where you were going to go?
Yes.
Okay.
My point was going to be, I love Bill Raftery. He is fun. He is very knowledgeable. He's just a happy guy. Jay Billis is an extremely intelligent basketball guy. He is a very good analyst.
Mm-hmm.
But he comes across as the grumpy old man compared to Raftery.
He really, more and more lately,
it's getting worse.
He's too young to be grumpy old man. I mean, we know that he's always beating up on the NCAA, and a lot of it's justified. But But go ahead.
But, Sean, here's the thing. Last time I checked, when you analyze a player or a team or a game, it doesn't come down to just shooting the basketball. I felt like in his analysis, he based his opinion on Matt Farrell on his shooting.
Solely on shooting.
In that game.
Yeah.
The final stats tell me that he was doing a lot of other good things for the offense. He had 9 assists and
Correct.
0 turnovers.
Correct.
So had he gone 4 for 12 from the field, would he have been classified as having a terrible night with the same assists and the same turnovers?
Probably not. You'd say he had an off night, down night, whatever.
Now, I think the guards...
1 out of 12 jumps out at you
sure.
from three-point range, that's for sure. And the shots, and the one thing that I did agree was the shot selection in particular that I think Billis said, Farrell, that's a terrible shot. That's terrible shot selection, because he did. He just brought the ball up court, never passed the ball once, put it up with a man... standing there. And
I didn't like that shot either, but he is an important part of this offense coming off a 28-point game. He has the green light.
Yeah, and I agree with that as well. Bonzi Colson did that interview with Allison Williams, and he said, hey, he's got to keep shooting. I completely agree with it, because if they were going to have a chance to win last night, he was going to have to make some of those shots, just like we said. So I have no problem with him continuing to put it up. Maybe a little bit better shot selection in some places, though.
I like analysts that are... truly honest. There's not enough of that,
right.
Honestly, in today's broadcasting. But I, as a broadcaster of college hockey, shy away from calling a player terrible. It's just my opinion to be that derogatory toward a student athlete, a collegiate player that's not getting paid. I think that's too strong of a word. I think there's a way to word it that he's having a bad night. If it is pro sports, I have no problem with the unleashing of some strong words, but this is just my opinion. I think to say that Matt Farrell was terrible was poor judgment in Jay Billis' thought process, and I think outside of the shooting, and I'll say this, I was on the fact that I thought the transition defense wasn't good enough last night. That's partially on the guards, and Matt Farrell is a guard, so... I'm leaning toward Farrell and the other guards for not getting back. I made the point that Torres had a dunk, and he ended up being the first one down the floor defending a layup and got a foul because nobody else got back. That can't happen.
Right.
That cannot happen.
Yeah. Not against Carolina, because that's the Carolina game forever. It's that secondary break. That's what they're going to do. They're going to get back, and they're going to put it up. You've got to be on that.
So the bottom line is, I don't believe Jay Billis should have said Matt Farrell was terrible, and I don't believe that was even the right analysis, because outside of shooting, there were other good things that he did in the game, and I think he based his opinion just on the shooting performance, and I think that's unfair.
Yeah, and I just say, you could say he's having a terrible shooting night, but you're right, he did not have an overall terrible game, because as the point guard, he still did do the things you were talking about, facilitating, didn't turn the ball over. 9 assists. That's a good night for a point guard. He did have a really bad shooting night, but I wouldn't give him a terrible grade overall. If I was given a letter grade, I'd probably give him somewhere around a C, with the fact that he did not shoot well, bringing his grade down. All right.
Give me Raft any day.
Here's another one, another commentator, and one that I haven't necessarily heard that much of, but I saw this over the weekend and wanted to ask you about it. Fair or foul, former UConn player Donnie Marshall, who was doing IU's game against Minnesota last Friday night, he said on FS1 that Indiana's iconic warm-up pants, he criticized and called out their warm-up pants, the candy stripes, saying they've got to go. Fair or foul?
Why does that matter? Why does it matter? Now, I'm not an IU fan, but when I think of IU, I think of those warm-up pants that they've had for so many years.
Yeah.
So I don't even know why an analyst would even be concerned of such a thing. Now, if it has something to do with the uniform, still it's not really a factor in a game, but I'll say this. Remember a couple of years ago, it's been more than a couple of years now, because Notre Dame was still Adidas. Remember for the NCAA tournament, they had those awful jerseys they made the teams wear? Like Louisville had them, Notre Dame had.
Right.
Remember, it was just, they were very odd. Now,
yeah.
If you're ever going to criticize something, maybe then, but I don't understand the thinking of going after a team's warm-up pants. That seems rather silly, and that sounds like a player that's jealous of the team he is talking about.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I guess I didn't think about it that way. But personally, and I know there's a lot of Indiana fans, but look, this is not 1975. To me, the pants are an eyesore. They do not look good.
Really?
This, you know, people wore plaid pants and big fly floppy collar shirts and stuff back then too, and we're not wearing those these days. And the things are made out of polyester, for that matter. I realize it's some kind of iconic look. A lot of other teams wore those back in the 70s too. I don't get it. I know it's their tradition, but I don't get it. Notre Dame isn't wearing the same warm-ups. We saw them wear throwback warm-ups from 1978 against Florida State,
and they were
the
awesome.
Other day. They're not. They were.
I loved them.
They did look pretty cool, but they're not wearing the same things. So I'm with him on this, and I realize there are a lot of people who aren't going to like that, but I don't like them either, and I never have. There are a lot of high school teams in Indiana who do their own takes on those things, and I don't like them either. So that's just me. It's a personal thing. Now, you're right. It doesn't have any effect on the game. So big picture, what difference does it really make? But I just don't like the look.
Now, you're a Kansas guy.
Right.
Okay. Just want to put that out there. And
their uniforms have progressed over the years as well. A lot of different looks that they have in their uniforms. And they don't have a specific warm-up type either. So
just want all the IU alums in St. Joe County, that was Sean Steiner
yeah, that's
talking,
right.
And not Darren. That was Sean that said that, so I don't want the voices to be confused. I don't want the emails in the morning. I actually defended Indiana.
You did.
After years ago of applauding Indiana for firing Bob Knight, boy, the abuse I took for about 3 weeks. Oh, boy.
I can imagine.
Oh, boy, that was an interesting time, but I know I'm still right. From that, but that's a story for another.
And I think that the part of what Donnie, I'm not sure who was doing the play-by-play with him, but he called him out right away. He was like, "Are you kidding? We're sitting here in Bloomington at Assembly Hall, and you're calling out the warm-up pants here." So, All right,
well, I'm finding out now. I got to be careful what I say. Let's just say, I feel like anybody can become a broadcaster now with the different outlets that are doing games.
True.
And I'll leave it at that. Because I witnessed some unprofessional things in broadcast booths at collegiate games that I'm just kind of appalled by. Because it's just people that are not professionals yet. I'll just leave it at that.
Yep, I hear you.
I'm dancing around the bush, so I'll just stop. I'll shut up. Go ahead, next question.
No, that's all right. Do you want to, I know you've got a lot of Colts stuff. Okay. Do you want to take a time out and talk about that?
Let's do that.
All right.
I'll have to check my uniform to make sure I look okay.
Right.
You may call me out here in a second.
You don't wear striped pants to work, so you've got nothing to worry about.
Well, I know I never will now. 14 in front of the top of the hour here from the new Colts head coach Frank Reich next on WSBT. 11 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett. Sports be brought to you by Budweiser on 96.1 FM. WSBT, spring training camps open today. Baseball right around the corner. NFL news today. The Indianapolis Colts officially introduced Frank Reich as their new head coach. Former NFL quarterback, 85-98. With the Bills, Panthers, Jets, and Lions. Got his coaching start with the Colts as an intern under Tony Dungy. Also from 06 to 11, wide receiver coach and quarterback coach for the Indianapolis Colts, won the Super Bowl as the Eagles' offensive coordinator. And earlier today, Frank met the media, as did his boss, general manager, Chris Ballard.
Just know this. And I talk to our players and our team about this all the time. Obstacles happen. Obstacles, that's what makes this league great. You know, overcoming the hard times, That's what makes football great. That's what the great lesson of football is, that it doesn't always work out or go the way we mapped it out or we planned it. But it's the mentally tough, gritty people that overcome these things that are successful. That is what we're going to be built on. That's what this city is built on. That's what this organization is built on. And you can bet we're going to get there. Unquestionably, we're going to get there.
Man, I bet you Ballard could fire up a kindergarten class that's ready to eat Rice Krispie treats. I mean, he's intense in everything that he does.
You're going to eat those Rice Krispie treats, and they're going to be the best thing ever. That's what this kindergarten class is built on.
That's right. Well, here's Frank Reich, the new head coach of the Colts, his opening statement.
But today is a new chapter. Today is a new chapter. And I could not be more excited. And I just want to thank Mr. Irsay and the entire Irsay family for giving me this opportunity. I really believe we're going to work together to do something special for this city and for our organization, something that will be remembered for a long time. This is a great football city, and I'm happy to be home to my coaching roots. This is where I got my start, my first coaching job, here with Tony Dungy as an intern and then eventually as a quality control coach and then as the quarterback coach to get my start. What a better way to get started, and there could not be a better way to finish it right here in this great city.
I like this guy a whole lot better than Josh McDaniels from the standpoint of you want an upfront, honest guy that's not going to flip-flop. And I tell you what he did in Philadelphia, even though Doug Peterson called the plays, the head coach, the building of that offense, the changing of that offense, once Wentz went down and Foles took over, it was a team effort. And I think the Colts walked away with even a better situation than had it been McDaniels as the head coach. I mean, who knows how this is going to turn out, but I will take Reich over McDaniels any day of the week.
Yeah, I definitely think the Colts have won the last 7-8 days. Let's put it that way. Sure. They've won for right now, and I agree. I think that maybe this could be the guy that kind of was definitely a dark horse that ends up being the guy they should have had all along.
Mm-hmm. So Colts football is on 96.1 FM WSBT this fall. So what type of Colts team should we expect? Here's the new head coach, Frank Reich.
The first one is that we will be the toughest. We will be the toughest, both mentally and physically. What I mean by that is there will be a relentless pursuit to get better every day. A relentless pursuit. Relentless every day. Get better. And an obsession with finishing strong. An obsession with finishing strong. Secondly, we will be the most disciplined team. We will have the structure, we will have the system, and we will have the processes that cultivate discipline. Why is this so important? Well, there's a quote that I've had on my desk. I've had two quotes on my desk since my rookie year in 1985. And one of them reads this: the sweat of discipline and the hard work of repetition always precedes the thrill of spontaneity in any pursuit of life. And so discipline is going to be the foundation that's going to create a lot of joy out on that field and in this city. And when we wear the horseshoe, we'll be wearing it with a lot of joy and a lot of pride in our hearts. And it's going to be fun to be a part of that. Thirdly, we're going to be the most prepared team. The second quote that I've had on my desk since 1985 simply reads this, and these two quotes have been a life philosophy and a life mission for me, that no man becomes suddenly different from his habits and cherished thoughts. No man becomes suddenly different from his habits and cherished thoughts. And so what we're going to be about as an organization and as a football team is creating and cultivating habits, championship habits, and championship thoughts. And then fourth, we're going to be the most united team. We're going to be a close team. It's going to be built around trust, respect, and love.
That's all fine and dandy. You need a healthy Andrew Luck to run that offense. They need their quarterback.
It's absolutely right.
And Brissett's
RPOs
okay.
Don't mean anything if you don't have the right trigger man.
Brissett's okay. It's a good fill-in, but the franchise needs to be back on the field. Again, Colts football, you can hear every game this fall on 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Hi, this is Dan Patrick, and you're listening to South Bend's number one sports talk show, Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT.
Dan Patrick Show, weekday mornings, 9 to noon on 96.1 FM, WSBT. Tonight's Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some buds. Notre Dame football vacating 21 victories after the NCAA denied their appeal today. Also, Bart Curtis has left the Mishawaka football program to become the new head football coach at Warsaw. 90 victories in 10 years with the Cavemen. Sean, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds good.
It's the top of the hour at WSBT South Bend.